Java voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when them old boys raised on shotguns, we say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause the country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hope you're doing well today. Happy Saturday to you and all that kind of jazz. And so with that said, you're listening to Mad Science with www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, then you can jump over there to shazoozradio.com/superchat.html, where you can have the pleasure of talking to the Awake Radio crew at the same time with the Shazooz Radio crew, and basically getting involved. And with that said, doggone, I just had a brain freeze. I ain't even eating ice cream. I don't know what happened there. But anyway, just happened again. I got a mental issue. Oh, I can remember what I was going to go now. All right, well, if you want to join in on the call, you want to get come on live on here and talk about some of the subjects that I'm talking about, or bring up a new one for alternative energy or something like that, then just jump over there on Skype and add Shaziz as a user, or if you're already one of the people that's already in my doggone list, just go ahead and call me. Anyway, basically what I wanted to talk about today is transfer of energy. I posted three video links down in the chat room that are all related as far as transfer of energy. At the very first one, a man's taken a hard drive motor and essentially has made a pulse motor and is basically putting out a lot more voltage than he is than he's actually putting in. Keep in mind, every time I say putting out more voltage than he's actually putting in, that's when I get people to start freaking out and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know, is that the amperage ain't there and so on and so forth, you know. That's not the point. The point is the transfer of energy that's occurring in there. And you can take a transformer, any transformer out there, doesn't matter. It doesn't have to have a secondary on it, just a primary by itself. And you can connect it to a 9-volt battery source or any battery source for that matter. Put your thumb on both of those leads, and once you connect it, those two wires together onto that battery, you'll energize that coil. The moment you take your thumb off of one of those wires, you're going to get what's called back EMF. It's going to be a sudden surge because now that magnetic field has already energized that coil to its maximum. It can't go any further. And the moment you let that off, that energy is going to release back into your thumb and shock the crud out of you. This concept is actually used in what they call magnetic ballast. And so, basically, what a magnetic ballast does is it turns the power on, shuts it off, turns it on, shuts it off, turns it on, shuts it off. And as those spikes are coming back out, the high voltage that's generated by doing this is energizing the gas inside those bulbs, causing them to light up. And they're a lot more efficient, as far as I'm concerned, than the older style ballasts that they use and the modern style solid state circuit tree that they use to energize these bulbs. Anyway, so with that said, all you're doing literally is transferring energy. You're not doing nothing amazing, is basically what I'm trying to say. All you're doing when you connect that coil up is you're throwing nature off balance, and nature's going to slap it back down really hard, no matter what you do. Every time you throw nature off balance, and nature's going to put it right back into place. It's like stretching a rubber band out and looking down the center of it and then letting go of one end. Hopefully it's not the end where your eye is connected. Anyway, so moving right along, the second video that I put down in there is one of my favorite YouTubers out there as far as alternative energy goes, Sky Collection, because he does really amazing work. And he's been doing these really cool custom pancake coils. And essentially, what he's getting going on there is a really good transfer of energy. The way that he designs his coils, bifiler, were, you know, essentially two wires that start off together and they wind them around, and then the two ends are connected and so on. But he makes multiple layers of these things and uses ferrite, not a ferrite core like you'd normally see. He makes it like a disc kind of ferrite. And essentially, when those coils are energized, that ferrite core acts just like the core in a regular transformer. It kind of, you know, helps it to reach out and grab that core and then even assist in the collapse of that energy on the way down. The third video that I posted in there is a guy with a mini Tesla coil where he's showing how powerful this thing is, but the key point is what he's got in his hand as far as the different noble gases that he's energizing into the plasma state. And you can see when he gets those things close to there, those different colors of the gases that are created, different colors of plasma, determined by, you know, once one of them was helium and one of them was argon. And all the different noble gases will basically show different colors when they're energized into the plasma state. They use this concept in neon signs. But what I'm trying to get at here is that from the pulse motor style motor that the first video was doing, to the pancake coils on the other side, and to the Tesla coil, all of these things have a common denominator in there, is how you're guiding this energy in order to amplify the voltage up. When you amplify that voltage up, that raises the frequency of the energy wave that's actually coming out of this deal. And that frequency wave is what is actually energizing the gas into the plasma state. So all you're doing literally is moving energy from one point to the next. And you're getting a pretty good result by using the magnetic ballast concept and the back EMF, such as what the pulse motors are doing. To right in this video right here, he's just lighting up an LED. Doesn't seem all that impressive, but in reality, you can light up a whole lot of LEDs using that energy. All you're doing is moving it from one place to the next. Back when I first started working in alternative energy, I had an idea a long time ago. A lot of folks called this little generator that I made, called it an alternator because of the way that it was designed. But it wasn't as efficient as it could have been. I first started off using magnetrons out of lawnmowers and was getting really high voltage sparks out of there. But once again, if you're trying to build a generator, the high voltage sparks isn't going to run the inefficient step that we're running right now. And so I tested that for quite a while, and then I moved on from that to some coils that came inside of fish tank air pumps. All of these generators that I'm talking about, you can actually go back and look at some of my older videos and you'll see what I'm saying. But I built the flywheels out of two-part epoxy resin, had the magnets embedded in those, and you can see, and I also mentioned in the videos that they weren't balanced, they weren't they wobbled a lot. You had to have it bolted down to the table, otherwise it'd walk off the table. One of the things that I like about these hard drive motors is that they have precision bearings in there and they don't take a lot to turn. And so I did a video quite some time back about turning these hard drive motors actually into generators by spinning them, the RPMs up on there. Using everything that I've learned about all these three different concepts right here, the pulse motor, the pancake coils, the Tesla coil, and all that, if in the right shop you could get people to precisionally build some flywheels, some magnetic flywheels, some precision coils, all wound in the proper direction, and some glass tubing for, let's say, to build a mini plasma reactor. All the concepts that I've been talking about all this time could be proven with one nifty little gizmo. when you're trying to pull trying to pull energy off of a generator, you invoke Lenz's law, because when you put your load on, when you turn the first light bulb on, or whatever it is that you're going to be running off of that generator, you allow that electricity to flow back into the same generator that you're trying to pull your energy from. So what I've been saying for quite some time, and hoping that somebody would try to replicate or test, build a gizmo, is that instead of trying to pull that energy directly off of that generator head, that you transfer that energy into a completely different form of energy. It's still energy, nonetheless. It's still electricity. It's just a complete different form of electricity. And with plasma, you get actually quite a few things out of the plasma, but the main being, you get visible light. And since science says that light is heat and heat is light, vice versa, then you know you just turn that high voltage into light and heat. Back in the late 1800s, they had what was called the mercury arc rectifier that I'm sure you've heard me talk about many times. When Tesla was doing the AC current and Edison was on the DC current, and they finally both had the infrastructures in place. Edison already had DC infrastructures with elevator motors and such. And they had to figure out a way that if they was going to run these off of AC current, how to figure out how to rectify this high voltage AC into high voltage DC to run those elevator motors and other stuff. And so that's where the mercury arc rectifier came into play. It sent high voltage AC into a little pool of mercury, which caused it to get hot. And the mercury vaporized into a gas state, and the high voltage AC continued to come in, which energized the gas into the plasma state. Now that plasma, the energy inside there, the light, the heat, pressurized inside that chamber and would only allow the electron flow in one direction. So, therefore, they literally created a diode, a bridge rectifier, you know, change the high voltage AC into high voltage DC. So, that's essentially what I've been saying all along. Now, the difference is with the mercury being a liquid metal, that when you first hit it up is going to be literally a dead short. And so Lenz's law is going to come into effect right out of the gate. I mean, you're transferring electricity right through that mercury back into the same generator you're trying to pull the load off of. And once that liquid mercury was turned into a gas and then into the plasma state, you would notice a drastic reduction in the Lenz effect as far as the electricity actually flowing back into that generator head, because now it's in the gas state, now it's in the plasma state, and it's only allowing the energy to flow in one direction. So with that said, starting off from, instead of mercury, starting off from any of the other noble gases, helium, argon, or halogen, or there's a whole list of them that you could actually use, you can still get the same exact effect. And so, in a proper lab setting with a machine shop and the proper tools to build bearings and such that are perfectly balanced, that all the coils are at the right angle to the magnetic disc, everything is all adjusted precision to where you get the, what's the word I'm looking for, the most efficiency out of this design. you can not only pick up the back EMF, you can use that concept of how the magnetic ballast is actually work. It's that make and break of that circuit that's actually causing that pulse of high voltage. Now, back when Tesla was doing his knife switch experiment, where he's trying to figure out why it is that every single time he'd flip that knife switch really fast, that he'd get a sudden surge of energy and then everything would level back off. That's what actually brought about the whole concept of everything from wireless energy to telephone and telegraph and all that kind of stuff, because that energy was built up behind that circuit. And the moment he closed that switch down, all that energy rushed in to level everything out again. And so he would get a big wave out of the deal. And that's basically how the radio works. It's an oscillation. It's turning the switch on and off, on and off, on and off, and allowing, just for a brief instance, all that energy to rush in. If you ever go out to turn your garden hose on, and the moment you turn that valve on, you'll notice right out of the very first portion of the gate, I mean, as soon as you turn that thing on, you got a surge of pressure rushing out into that empty void of atmosphere that's outside. And so once that sudden rush is over with, then you'll notice that your water hose will level out. And that's the anomaly that can be monopolized on as far as bringing voltage up. And that's how the magnetic ballast works. That's how the Slayer exciter circuit works. That's how the Tesla coil works, is by making and breaking that circuit and allowing that energy to build up for a second and then release it. Build it up, release it. These pulse motors that, especially in this first video that he did with the coils and then catching the back EMF on there when that circuit's making and breaking, using in a lot of these pulse motors these days, they'll use reed switches, because essentially it's a magnetic switch that when the magnet's in the general vicinity will close the circuit and allow electricity to flow through it. Then once that magnet flies out of the range of that reed switch, it will release that circuit and then repeat that over and over again for every time the magnet passes across there. So it's essentially a mechanical switch. So whether you do it mechanically or whether you do it with transistors or MOSFETs, it doesn't matter. When you turn it off and turn it off, turn it on, back and forth, you're going to build up that sudden surge that goes in there, and that's where everybody talks about recapturing that back EMF as the field is collapsing. If you can visualize it as like blowing up a balloon, when you blow up that balloon and it gets really big, and then you hold on to it and then suddenly let go of it and it releases that pressure, that's essentially what's going on with that magnetic field, is that you expanded it out, and then once you let go of it, it rushes back, slams right back in, nature balances itself back out. Using these concepts that I've talked about here, and the pancake coils and basically the secondaries on the Tesla coils, or the primaries on the Tesla coils, they're nothing more than actually guiding those fields. And it's basically the equivalence of plumbing. If you got a large pipe, you can get a large volume. If you got enough pressure, you can get a large volume of water moving, which would be the current watts and amps that everybody's all worried about. You decrease that surface area or that pipe down to a smaller pipe and still try to run the same amount of energy through that pipe, then you're going to raise up the pressure, which is high voltage. So now you're taking your energy, trying to force it down a small tube, and raising the pressure up. The high voltage, high pressure is the high frequency that is required to actually energize this gas into the plasma state. See, the water molecule is a dipole molecule. It has a positive and a negative side to it, right? It has poles on there. And so when you put your food in your microwave oven, when you send a really super short, fast wave through that molecule, as the peaks and valleys of that wave is going through that water molecule, it's rocking it back and forth so rapidly that it produces friction, literally friction in a water molecule, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food. Well, the same exact thing is happening when you're sending high voltage into a container of gas. It's rocking them molecules back and forth so rapidly until they produce friction, which in turn produce heat, and so on. And so, it from the start to finish, from start time whenever I very first started working on alternative energy designs, I found out one thing. It is really super simple to produce high voltage. Now, in order to produce a generator that produces a lot of wattage, a lot of amperage, and a lot of current, it's a different story. You have to have a power source that's strong enough to overcome the back EMF that is created, the lens effect that is created once you start putting that thing under a load. But that same exact generator, if you weren't using it like it is in the conventional sense, if you wasn't using that electricity like you're doing right now, as far as plugging in to a gasoline generator, once you plug in and turn the light on, you can hear that generator bog down. And the more energy that you allow to flow back into that generator head, the stronger this spec becomes. And it will continue until you overload that generator and it literally locks itself down like a magnetic brake. And at that point, as for every light you put on to that that generator head, that gasoline engine is going to get slower and slower and have to work harder and harder to overcome the lens effect, the force that is being generated. It's basically like trying to drive down the road with your feet on the brakes. After a while, something's got to give. Either your motor's going to get hot and overheat, or your brakes are going to get hot and overheat and basically destroy one or the other or even both. So instead of using the energy in a destructive manner such as we do, instead of having used the gasoline engine to force the generator head to try to overcome this lens effect, then we take this energy off the generator head, turn it into a completely different form of energy that is not allowing that energy to flow back into that generator head. So, with that said, even the laws of physics state, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? Once you change that energy from the electricity that you're normally accustomed to using in that generator head into the plasma state, it is the same energy in a different range, a different frequency. It's different, yet this is kind of hard to explain. It's different, but yet it's the same energy. You haven't lost anything. To this point, you have lost no energy in this entire process. You started off with a certain amount of fuel, turned the generator head, which in turn turned the generator, the magnet rotors inside there, which basically produced the energy flow from that mechanical work that you started with. And that generator head, depending on how many RPMs it's actually spinning at, will produce a maximum amount of energy. Once it gets up to its as fast as you could spin this thing, and the mechanical portions of such as the bearings begin to break down, and the oil, you know, there's only so far that you can push that mechanical energy in order to be able to produce the electricity that you're wanting out of it. However, the faster you're spinning this thing, the higher the voltage spikes are going to rise up. That's why I was able to take that hard drive motor, spin it up to about 3,500 RPMs, and be able to light up a whole entire strand of LEDs. Well, hello there, Justin. You're live on the air. How's it going, man? I can't hear you.
There you go.
Anyway, so when I raise the RPMs up on the hard drive motor, I raise the voltage up on the hard drive motor, so I actually had the frequency required to energize fluorescent bulbs with, or the electron flow to light up LEDs. See, that's the whole thing about the LEDs. When LEDs aren't run like a normal tungsten element light bulb, they're not run like a fluorescent light bulb. All an LED needs is an electron flow. When those electrons interact with the materials inside the LED, it releases photons of light. And so that's how you get this diode to actually produce visible light, when in reality a diode is its main purpose is to only allow electricity to flow in one direction. So once you understand all these concepts and put them all together, then you can actually build a generator. And like I said, if you're in a precision shop to where you can actually get these bearings to be all balanced out, your flywheel to be perfectly balanced, and to make these things the most efficient as possible, you could literally build the equivalence of a high voltage generator to do nothing more than move energy from one place to the next. And folks like Deeds out there basically showed how you could take this wireless energy transfer, which is at a high frequency from the Slayer exciter circuit, send it across to a receiver tower, and then bring that energy back down and run it through capacitor banks, and then put it back into actual usable current again, according to what it takes to run what we're running right now. Back in the day when Tesla was working with his wireless energy, he was able to match the frequency range of the actual tungsten element inside of the incandescent light bulbs and be able to light that light bulb. So either concept would be a way to change that energy form. You still there, Justin?
Oh yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
So, basically, none of the energy was lost in that whole process. The only time energy ever gets lost is when there's something hindering its travel, you know, and it's really not lost, it's slowed down. Its frequency range has actually changed. It's now not a microwave like it was before, if it was a microwave when it started. What do you think, Justin? You got any ideas on all that?
Well, frequency, vibration, oscillation, resonance, when we're dealing with the branch of electricity, it's hard to gain any kind of quote-unquote over unity with electricity, an electromagnetic wave.
Who's trying to gain over unity?
Well, over unity, the definition just means out of the norm, right?
No, it actually means you're getting out more than you put in. And so I don't want to get over Unity. I'm not never even in my entire time of actually doing alternative energy, never even suggested that I was looking to get out more than I put in. Now I know for a fact that I can get higher voltage out than I put in. Right? So all I've done is change the speed of which this energy is going in and the pressure of which is coming out the other side. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
There's where I'm talking about you can get more out than you put in. You can definitely get out more voltage. That's irrefutable. There's nobody in the electricity world or the science world that can deny the fact that you can put 100 volts in and get 1,000 volts out. All right. Now, what they're talking about and the mincing of words and technology there is that, oh, well, you're getting 100 volts, but you're not, you can't run nothing off of this. And I never said you could. But all you did was transfer that energy from one place to the next. But you did get out more voltage than you put in. You see what I mean? Like a 9-volt battery can get out hundreds, if not thousands, of volts of electricity out of the other side. It's all pressure. There's your over unity. Still there?
Oh, yeah.
Did I melt your brain?
No.
Now, see, a lot of folks, they get free electricity and over unity and 0-point energy all confused. Now, see, there ain't nobody out there who can deny that energy's free, because energy's surrounding us in every doggone directions. Now, to convince the average Joe out there about free energy, free electricity, or whatever, you have to actually physically build a device that can be measured and whatever. The way to do that, as far as I'm concerned, is to stop running the things the way that we run them now. And everything is such a waste of energy, trying to force something to move, like the doggone electric motor, for instance. You take a wireless AC tester and you can find a magnetic field outside that motor. Why do you need it that far out? You see what I mean? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. No, I don't know. Electricity. People only limit themselves with it, I think, or truly.
It's not. It's
like questions like Ohm's law. Well, what's the opposite mathematics of Ohm's law? Why can't an electricity enter into a Faraday cage? Well, what kind of energy can enter into a Faraday cage? Like, to me, like, all the things that people say are impossible, I ask questions why.
Well, you know, if energy can go in the positive realm, then it also can go in the negative realm.
Right.
But vice versa. And essentially, what we're trying to accomplish here is to literally build a device that people can get the same comforts that they got, you know, like the heating, cooling, lighting, and all that kind of stuff there, without having to sit there and pay an astronomical light bill on a monthly basis. All right? Now, I know this is possible. All right? The technology is all already there. It's been there all along. And everything from, it doesn't matter which, there's a big old argument out of there over which circuit's better, the Bedini circuit or the Tesla coil or blah, blah. It just goes on and on. But the fact of the matter is, they've all missed the point. You're only guiding the energy with your coils and all your stuff like that. The capacitor isn't nothing more than the storage. The battery's nothing more than the storage. All you're doing, anytime you charge up a battery, is throwing nature off balance, and then whenever you put your light bulb on, you're getting work done as that balance is being transferred back to its normal level, which would be an empty battery. You see what I mean? And so they're not they're not grasping that concept and figuring out that, it doesn't matter how you move this energy. I mean, if you can come to a general understanding that you understand exactly how energy is transferred from point A to point B and how it travels in waves and so on and so forth, to how the magnetic field expands and collapses, all that. Once you got all that down, it doesn't matter which one of these devices you use, you're just going to change that energy from one form to the next. From the AC coming out of your wall through a bridge rectifier turned into DC, or through a mercury arc rectifier turned into DC. It doesn't matter. You're just changing the wave and the direction and whatever, that energy. You haven't done nothing special throughout this entire deal. You threw nature off balance when you produced the magnetic field that is basically generating the current that you want inside your electric generator. Now, the moment you stop that generator, everything balances it back out. And in the instance that that generator stops, as it's balancing itself back out, you get a collapsing of the field, which in turn, I mean, nature does it quickly. I mean, it just slaps it right back down to where it was. Poof. All right. Now you don't get no more electricity out of the end of the wire there. However, if you had your fingers on the edge of that doggone wire, right at the time that you shut that power off and that field collapsed, you're going to get lit up. You see what I mean?
Well, I know exactly what you mean. We're having a conversation just totally about equilibrium of a field that we can't see.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying that we have everything we need to literally build the perfect generator. You got to get somebody in the right shop with all the materials necessary. You need the dream team, like I've been talking about forever and day. The dream team of, somebody's really good at welding. Somebody's really good at machining and running a lathe and winding coils and stuff like that. You get the right team in the right laboratory with the people with the mechanical minds, and you come out of there with the perfect generator. Now, these guys are trying to get these electric motors to run themselves, but in reality, what's going on is the electric motor they're trying to run the energy back into the other deal. Those are where your losses are coming in, because they're not made right to begin with. But there's enough learned from the pulse motor to the alternating systems and the pancake coils and the ways that you design certain bifilers coils and the plasma state, high voltage, whatever. A lot of times, like, these guys will run these, what do you call them? Doggone it, they're inside of the flyback transformers. They'll run these flyback transformers out of computer monitors or TVs or whatever, off of the high voltage, or basically 110, 120 volts AC or 220, whatever it is in your neighborhood, and go through a primary, then step that voltage up to a high voltage, when in reality, you don't even need the high voltage, or the mains to do this, and you don't even need the primary to do this. You can actually tap on and off the secondary on the doggone coil and get the same exact result. You see what I'm saying? All you're doing is getting the pressure. You're building that pressure up. You're doing exactly what Tesla was doing when it was flipping that night switch on and off. The pressure levels out. You hit it with some voltage. When that field expands out as far as it can go, and then you let it collapse on its own, and that energy as it slops back through the other way is the high voltage spike that you need in order to move that energy from one place to the next. Are you asleep today?
No. I got a question. When can you send sound to a transformer and have it produce electricity?
vehicle, you need something that's going to be a receiver for that sound. Now, if you could find the right tone that's going to interact sound and the magnetic field's all going to be one and the same. It's transferring through a medium. You know, if you could find a sound wave that would actually interact with the electron in the copper to vibrate it, I mean, it's like that effect that you get whenever you turn the bass up in your car and your back window's vibrating, all right? Well, that acoustic wave bouncing off that glass is causing that glass to vibrate. That doesn't mean that the glass is resonating with that bass. However, if you find the resonant sound of that glass in the back and you vibrate that same glass using that resonant frequency of the glass, you'll blow the back window right out of that car. You know, now structurally, that glass can only withstand so much vibration before it's going to shatter anyway. But at the point, if you actually match the tone, the sound wave of that glass that's in there, you can get that glass to shatter multitudes times quicker using less amount of energy input to do it. It's like the same concept of the opera singer and the crystal glass. Once that opera singer raises the voice up on that and matches that tone of that glass, and that glass begins to vibrate, then one pitch over the top and that thing will shatter. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. So what's the difference between a tuning fork, a Tesla coil, and an obelisk?
Basically, it's just a way to guide the energy. That's it.
So they're all transmitter receivers.
All of it, you know. If you got two identical Tesla coils, they got a terminology called sympathetic resonance, where when you bang on one and it begins to vibrate, anything that's in tune with that will vibrate as well. And there's no limitation to how many different tuning forks that you could get to vibrate. I mean, matter of fact, that would be a really awesome experiment for somebody to get, let's say, 1,000 tuning forks and bang on one and have the rest of them in line. All you have to know about this is that you have to have that tuning fork within the range of how far that wave can actually travel to the next tuning fork. You see what I'm saying?
Compression wave. Pressure,
yeah.
PA.
Because as that wave is going out into the atmosphere, it is slowing down. And so further you get away from it, the quieter it gets, right? Sound will travel really rapidly, especially in water. But once it starts running into stuff, it's just like anything else. It starts losing its momentum and slowing down. It's no longer the same frequency that you started with.
Right. The refraction rate changes.
Yeah.
Everything has time. Everything is a result of time, right? You don't get amps until you have volts. A resistor just squeezes it like putting your thumb on the hose, right? A voltage, higher voltage, is the result of amperage.
Well,
because it's just being squeezed, whatever we have in the tube, to be drained out. We can drain it out in a certain amount of time. We can alter that time, right? We are the timekeepers of this.
All I'm saying, though, as far as generating electricity and building a free energy device, people's going to have to figure this out, all you're doing is moving energy from one place to the next. You can change it, you can do whatever you want to it, but that energy, regardless of whether it comes in a sound wave or a light wave or whatever, you're not going to lose any if you're using it properly. Right now, we're not using it properly. We're producing a massive amount of internal combustion in a gasoline engine, which is pressure and torque and all that kind of stuff, which that engine in itself is generating a lot of wasted heat. All right, now if you was to make that generator more efficient from the get-go to recapture that heat so that on that side you make that engine as efficient as physically possible, then that energy you take off of that, you don't take it directly from it, which would put a heavier load back onto that generator, making that generator have to work yet even harder again. You see what I mean? You, from start to finish, make this thing to where every bit of that energy is guided somewhere to where you're going to be able to use all of it, not just the electricity coming out of the generator head. Now you got friction loss and bearings and so on and so forth. There's no reason why you couldn't actually design the perfect bearing at the right temperature that would literally never go bad.
Ceramic.
Yeah, it could be done.
Ceramic bearings.
And once you take that energy off of the generator head, it's up to you where you want to put it. You know, you want to heat water with it, you want to run lights with it, whatever. You want to cook with it. I believe the plasma reactor that I'm talking about, the one I designed, it's no hoodoo voodoo version of plasma where you got to love the doggone thing in order to get free electricity. It's taking energy off of an existing generator, moving it to a completely different range to make that generator where it doesn't have to work nearly as hard. And from that point on, I mean, you could build windmills that would produce high voltage as opposed to high current watts. You don't need the high current watts at this point in the game. All you need is that pressure and that speed of that wave to come through there and energize that doggone gas into the plasma state, thus forth producing light and heat at the same exact time, and producing a DC current out the other side. And DC current, we know, we can charge batteries with. You see what I mean?
Well, that's the whole thing. That's why they got the system off of batteries, right? Like, New York City used to have batteries underneath of it, and that's how they used to light up the arc lights that used to light up the streets, right? DC is by far greater because it allows people to be free, right?
Only,
I can make a couple
only
batteries and bring them up north into my cottage, and then there I go, right?
DC is only better if used properly. The AC is also actually going to be safer. So by turning it into DC current in one section, right, where your battery bank is, and then using that DC current to run, like a inverter system, you know, as far as like, I'm saying as far as like living in your house kind of thing, you know, you don't want to be walking past the outlet and have static electricity on you on a DC system because it'll leap out of the wall and zap you the crud out of you. So, both of them have their pros and cons. You see what I'm saying? If you take the energy and you want to move it into a storage bank, then DC is going to be your best bet to move it into that storage bank, because even AC current from windmills has to be rectified before you can charge your DC batteries. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. DC is, what I'm saying is that DC is the ultimate freedom, because it allows you to go anywhere. Anybody can make a battery, right? So it's like having an air compressor. If everybody has an air compressor, everybody can fill up their tire, right?
Yep, it's all pressure, man.
The standard conventional rotary stator apparatuses, like the Niagara Falls Generating Station, they're just sending high voltage to a transformer, which is no different than a battery. Right, it's a gearbox, it gears it down. But you're still hooked to a wire, you have no freedom. You gotta be hooked to a wire.
Well, that's why I've been saying about this gizmo that I'm talking about, by taking and understanding that all you need to generate electricity is high voltage. Now, that kind of sounds crazy, because I'm saying, well, high voltage is electricity, alright, but I'm saying, you don't need a generator head that's going to produce a lot of current watts and amps at this point.
Constant pressure is
all
what you want.
Yeah, well, that's where the high voltage comes in. all you want to do is produce the high voltage, and it is super simple to produce high voltage. You can produce high voltage by rubbing your feet on the carpet. You know, static electricity is so easy to create a Van de Graaff generator. Look at it, you can get in thousands of volts of electricity out of a Van de Graaff generator. Now, the big complaint is, well, you can't run your car, you can't run your house off of static electricity. Well, why not? It's still the same amount of energy, still the same energy, no matter what. And if you can move it from one point to the next really fast and dump it into containers, you know, it's like a swimming pool. You put high pressure over you put your thumb over that garden hose and hold it to the... Hold on, I gotta add Thomas the call.
Let's try and define it like this. If we have flow, particle, difference in potential, and force, right? Rain, right? It's falling, so that would be the flow. The particle would be a water droplet, right? Now, if we use a river as the flow, the particle would be a water molecule. There's really no difference in between the water drop and the water molecule.
I don't understand what you're saying here, Justin, because it's essentially mincing words, because everything that we're...
No. You're saying electricity and static electricity are the same. So I was referring to...
All of the
right.
energy.
So I was referring to rain falling, right, and the river flowing. They're both the same thing, but they're different forms.
Yeah, so it's essentially... You know, how you use that energy. You know, we know that certain elements used by themselves have either a highly explosive or a highly implosive pressure, and it doesn't take very much to actually to get that pressure. You know, and that was one of the doggone arguments about hydrogen technology using the electrolysis process, was that it took too much energy and you couldn't get the hydrogen fast enough in order to be able to use it. But in reality, they were using it all improperly to begin with. It's the same thing with electricity. Electricity is amazing, you know. I mean, you can get a lot of work done with electricity, but if you're using it improperly to begin with, it takes more electricity to run an electric motor than necessary. It's what I'm trying to say. So all the energy, doesn't matter where it comes from. It doesn't matter whether it's in water form, light form, or you know, sound waves or wind or static electricity. Doesn't matter. It's how you use that static electricity that matters. If you ever mess around with a Van de Graaff generator or a Wimshurst generator, and you pay real close attention right before that pressure builds up enough to leap across the spark gap, you can literally feel an ionic wind being created right before that jump across there. And in the auto industry, those who know what a Venturi is knows how that thing, it literally will suck air in from one side while pressure is being forced in through the other side, and actually give you a increase in pressure going in. You see what I mean? You can pump water with the Venturi effect. You understand what I'm saying here? Hello?
Yeah. I acknowledge, yes.
Yeah, so basically, it's all about how we're moving this energy. Now, if we get this people in the right doggone laboratory, and we put a machine together that is perfectly machined, that is perfectly balanced to where it is the most efficient that it can possibly be according to whatever design it is. Now, the input of the initial start of it could be anything from solar power, battery combination, or, you know, even a generator head. Right? Well, whatever input we start off with, when it finally gets through the entirety of the system, and it hasn't lost anything. I mean, because everything from start to finish is made super efficient. Like, the internal combustion engine is literally made to recapture that heat to as in a closed loop system, where you're not going to lose everything, anything. It's all in basically a thermos, right? That's what they say is not possible. You see what I'm trying to point out here?
Yeah.
They're saying you can't get out more than you put in. We're not trying to get out more than we put in. We never tried to get out more than we put in. What we're trying to do is figure out the most efficient way to move energy from point A to point B. And if you can do that, you could build a generator that you could just literally move static electricity fast enough into a storage bank that would build up the pressure that would act just like a battery. That video that I did called 9 volts, or even the video that I did called unsubscribe, it was only 9 volts of energy that it took to in order to keep that entire set of circuits going. There's like 10 circuits that all run off of 9 volts in this one deal that was running off of one little crank type winch that when you first started was kind of hard to turn until you got that energy flow going and you broke past the initial barrier in those capacitors. The moment I got past there, that little arm was so easy to turn that all I had to do is just barely maintain the doggone thing, and then eventually the entire circuit board would start coming to life. And I was able to move energy rapidly enough that I didn't have to work hard to get it. You see what I mean? That's the whole point. The wind turbines outside, if you have a windmill outside and you got the doggone thing running and the wind's blowing, the moment you put that thing under a load, the blade will slow down and you need more wind to overcome the resistance that's being developed by the lens effect. But if you never ever allow that lens effect to take place to begin with, by moving that energy away from that generator head, then even the least amount of wind will be able to turn that doggone windmill. You see what I mean? Cricket, cricket, cricket. That's terrible for live radio, man.
Well, there's all different types of ways of capturing energy. It's how you want to do it. It's up to the beholder, right? How you see it, how you create it, right? It's up to you.
Well, the capacitor technology and even the battery technology, the stuff like Robert Murray Smith has been working on and all that, all these right here, that's what I've been saying all along. We can make the super efficient batteries. We can make super efficient generator heads, super efficient plasma reactors, where you're basically taking the energy that you just generated and just changing it over, and then that energy could be put right back into a system. You know, they say that you'd never be able to get perpetual motion. I disagree, but I'm not going to be looking for perpetual motion. All I'm looking for is maximum efficiency. That's it. Once I get maximum efficiency, I already know electricity is free. I don't care what anybody in this world says. I know for a fact electricity is free. I can put my solar panel outside, and as long as that sun's up, I don't have to pay for that electricity. The same thing with the wind or any other force of nature. All you got to understand is that when nature is off balance, nature is going to balance itself back out no matter what. And there ain't nothing you can do to stop it. Once that happens, in the process of that occurrence of nature balancing itself out, and you get work done in between there, a perfectly balanced battery or capacitor is dead flat. You won't get any voltage off of it. It's it's dead flat. Everything is where it should be. The electrons are on this plate, the electrons are on that plate, everything's where it should be. That's exactly a perfectly balanced battery or capacitor, or any power source for that matter. Even the generator head that's on your normal gasoline generators. Once it's all stabilized and everything's right where it's supposed to be, that's a perfectly balanced generator. This is what nature wanted. That's what, and the moment you start spinning that thing up, throwing nature off balance, that's where you're getting this energy that you call an electricity. It's as simple as that. But once you know all these concepts and all these little tricks that everybody's been doing in there, every little deal, the pancake coil that Sky Collection makes his spinners out of, where he puts his magnets inside there, man, you should hear some of the RPMs this guy's getting up out of there. And when I say hear RPMs, I mean you can see them and measure them and stuff like that, but the tone of this magnet sitting in there just spinning up, it seems like this thing's going to like chew itself apart. You see what I mean?
So why do you have to send electricity? Why can't you just send sound to it?
Well, why couldn't you? He has to be at the right frequency range.
Right. People don't acknowledge the most greatest potential of pressure from our voice, right? That's a human apparatus, right? The vocal cord, right? It's a tube oscillator, right? It's 85.225 hertz of pressure. That's pressure that has compression and refraction, just like a tuning fork. It's concentric.
So, in your favorite portion of research, you're impressed with sound. That's one of the many ways that in order to be able to tap into nature's energy. That's build a generator using sound. It's not impossible. You know, it's all I'm saying. A lot of these folks out there got really good ideas. You know, the Bedini circuit's got really good ideas. The Tesla coil, really good ideas. All of these, but all of them are just pieces of the puzzle. The parts of the anomalies that putting together are the gears in the machine. We already got all the answers that we need as far as to build the perfect efficient generators. We got exotic materials out there that can be used for conductivity. We know what materials, what metals will conduct, and we even know how to make superconductivity.
You would send electricity down a plastic line.
Send electricity all over the place. There's electricity. We basically live in an electric universe. Alright, so.
Right, well, oh, wait, hold on. Universe. Uni, one, verse, song. Back to sound again. The singing spheres, everything's ringing. All these men, tied with the Bedini and Tesla and all this. This is like the old stuff. What are these guys trying to tell us? Sound.
In all of North America,
there is not one school that teaches vibratory physics.
That wasn't the whole deal. Look, it doesn't matter whether it's a sound wave, a light wave, or acoustic wave, whatever. It doesn't matter. All of the energy travels in waves. Otherwise, nature's perfect balance, everything's flat. You know, without the moon yanking on the earth, then the water would be perfectly flat. It would be all level. And unless you disrupt that water, you ain't got no waves. You know, and if there ain't nobody, you know, paddling around in a boat, then the water would be perfectly flat. And that's what everybody has to understand about any form of energy that they want. When nature's not doing nothing, when you're not doing nothing, everything is perfectly flat. You blow that balloon up, and the moment you blow that balloon up, once you release that pressure, what's the balloon going to do? It's going to go flat. That's it.
Right.
And so it don't matter to me whether you pick the energy up using sound or you pick the energy up using light, wind pressure, heat, or whatever. It's all the same thing. What happens when something that is really hot has time to disperse its energy out into the atmosphere? It becomes cold. That's it. and if there is no force coming back towards it, like the sun ain't beating on it, then it will remain cold. That's why I'm able to take that redneck hot tub over there and take several hundred gallons of water and heat it up. It takes me about 4 to 6 hours to heat that thing up to about over 100 degrees. And from that point on, I don't have to force any more energy into it. I can maintain that temperature at a solid 100 degrees. And in all reality, if I bring that thing up and leave it up too long, it will get too hot to use. So at some point, I can actually turn the power off of that dang hot tub and have some time in between there to where when the temperature starts to go down in the water because it's either being dispersed through me or out into the atmosphere, then I reach over and flip the switch back on and start warming it up again. But it only takes a tiny bit of energy to maintain it once you get the doggone thing started. Raymond's proved that with his two-stage oscillator. You know, once you get past that initial force, which is to heat up the pool, the rest of it's all, you know, just maintaining a constant flow of energy going into it. This is why our generators aren't working like they could be working, because we're trying to drag too much off of it too fast in the wrong manner. That's it. What do you think?
I like to think what are people going to do when they implement the new bill? As far as if you're off the grid, you got to pay $5,000 a year to your taxes now.
Well, see, and that's what the people got to get together and work out with the doggone governments to not allow them to be able to do that kind of stuff. I found this problem out here in Mad Science. I'll talk about anything. I even talk about politics on Mad Science. But my strong point as far as electricity and alternative energy is basically understanding the mechanics of how things work. And now, my manufacturing skills sucked. Obviously, my political skills sucked because I ain't been able to convince any politician to pay attention to detail for long enough to get any kind of resolution. But there are people out there with those skill sets who can actually start a campaign to get the politician to understand, look, we got the answers over here. If you're willing to listen to them and implement them, then we can resolve all these problems as far as the so-called energy crisis. Now, if people want to allow the government to charge them $5,000 of tax for it, then that's going to happen. But me, personally, I live on private property. I'm not looking to ask the government for anything, and I'm not going to pay any carbon taxes or any of that kind of craziness. I got my own land. I got my own property.
Well, that's the thing, though. You don't have your own land.
Yeah,
you have to pay land tax.
I do, because I live on private property. If you want to learn to understand the difference between private property and residential property, then you understand the difference between taxes. You need to try that out sometime, because if you live on private properties, it's a whole different from the taxation that you would get off of residential property. There, you might get charged for ownership of the land as far as the value of the land itself, but you're not getting taxed for the residential portion of it, because on the residential portion of it, when you pay those taxes, that means you're eligible for government programs such as the fire department and the police and any public utilities and that kind of stuff like that. You see what I'm saying? And that's where your taxes go in, to maintain all that kind of stuff. But on private property, you have to maintain your own roads. If you go down any county road down there and you look, you'll see two different colored signs. You'll see one green one and you'll see one brown one. The brown ones are private roads, and whoever owns that land has to maintain that road. The green ones are the county roads, and they're the ones that are maintained by the county via the taxes. But since it's private property and no taxes are being paid on that property towards the government to maintain anything on that property, then they don't get the benefits that the city gets. There's the difference. I live on private property. I don't live on residential property. There's actually no physical address to my property. That's the difference. So I ain't paying the government no money for my solar panels. I didn't even have to get a permit to put my house here. I just drug it in, put it up. That's it. Now, if I lived on residential property where I put this house, then I would have had to get a permit in order to do it. But since I live in an area that is not zoned, there's another thing you need to look into is zoning. All right? If you're in an area that's zoned, then you have the rules and regulations that you got to follow through. Well, lucky for me...
It sounds like you're describing what's called unincorporated land where nobody has any foothold on it.
Exactly.
Other than the county. It's when you get a city that starts trying to put a foothold on the area that you're in, that you start getting those other taxes and those other regulations. So you might look, since you're in Canada, Justin, into whether that law is going to extend to areas where basically there's not already an established residence, or that it's all incorporated.
Yep.
Well, personally for myself, I'm not worried about it because the church has no taxes, right? But for the rest of the people, like, what they're doing to people in Canada, if you're a farmer and you live out in the middle of nowhere, you're still going to pay land tax. And they implemented that for World War II and they never took it out. It was supposed to be taken back out, right? I never knew that in the United States that you can go and just squat somewhere.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? But... if that means if they want the land, then they can just kick you off it as well because they have an army.
They can't take this land from me.
Yeah, actually, you're living in a dream if you think that if they decide they want it, they can't just show up there with a couple tanks and kick you off. You got your own nuclear missile?
The whole process is they got to kill me first. All right? And so,
The whole process is... The truth of it is that the civility is a lie. The civility is a little gentle lie that we tell ourselves so we can sleep at night. And it works for the most part because there are so many people and there's so much land that if they start going out, and in fact I'm sure they're going out and taking land and nobody's talking about it, but because there's so much, you're insulated by thousands and thousands of years worth of them going to everybody else before they ever get to you. But the fact is, if you live in the United States, you do not own your land. The government ultimately owns your land because if they decide they need it, even if you paid your taxes, they'll just take it. If they decide they want to put a road in there or some governor decides he needs the land for a preserve or something like that, they'll just show up and take it and you end up with one heck of a nightmare fighting with them. And if you can get the publicity...
But you gotta
understand. To keep them from just stepping on you.
From my point of view,
coming in and taking the land from you.
Until they take my life, they can't have my land. Period. That's it. And it's not even
well,
my land.
That's a small bump in the road, though, to the war machine that doesn't care about your life.
But I don't
care. They've done it before, too.
But I don't care. Seriously, I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less if the military shows up today, shoots me, and takes my land. I don't care, because once I'm done with it, I don't need it anyway. All right? So this whole process of worrying about paying taxes on this land or worrying about the government taking my land, the moment I'm dead, I'm done with it.
We're not talking about worrying about it, though. We're talking about the truth of it.
Well, the truth
of it... As Raymond said, semantics, meaning the meaning of the words.
The truth of it is... Until they force me off of it, then that it's still mine, and it will be mine. My name's on the deed, and it's my land until they force me off of it. And once they force me off with it, that's the native view, though.
They didn't force you to hang on to it, though. Force themselves to hang on to it. They just owned it until they decided they didn't need it anymore, and they'd move on. And because nobody else was pulling this, we're going to squat until doomsday, like the government has brought in and, the Europeans brought in, they can just find someplace else to go that they actually wanted more than they wanted where they were at and move on.
Well,
It was healthier for the lamb, too.
Regardless of all that, I own my land until my creator takes it from me or the government comes in and steals it. I don't care. That's it. It's plain and simple as that. I don't care about all the craziness. If I want to be completely off the grid, I will be completely off the grid. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I'm not asking
for anything. Only way you're going to defeat that $5,000 thing is if everybody in the nation just stops asking for permission. Because they can't face everybody up. And they'll run themselves ragged doing
it. That's the whole key. You got to lead by example. And that's my example. My example is, it's my land until they come out there and kill me and take it from me. Period. I'm not asking them to build a house. I didn't. I moved a double wide trailer up inside of here. I didn't get no permit. I didn't ask nobody. I just bought it. I brought it here, put it on private property, and they couldn't do nothing about it. Period. I live in an unzoned piece of property that is private property. That has never been listed as residential, and as long as I'm not stupid enough to go up there and allow them to list it as residential and start accepting government services to maintain my properties, then they have no foothold on me. And that's what people got to start figuring out. If you buy a piece of property and it was already settled that it's residential, then you're going to have to pay taxes on it. But if you understand the difference between private property and zoning, not zoned or zoned, then you'll understand the tax system on the deal. There's a difference between the brown street sign and the green street sign for a purpose. The fire department won't even go down onto the brown street for you because you don't pay taxes on that property. That's how it works here. So, you know that you're going to have to sacrifice some of the system in order to live off the grid. But if you're stupid enough to pay $5,000 a year taxes on something that you own, then that's your choice. But they're not going to get $5,000 out of me per year off of my solar panels. They're not going to do it. Period. And as far as the whole carbon tax, if they ever force a carbon tax, I'll be the first one in jail. Because I ain't paying no carbon tax on some bogus global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. That's what people got to start recognizing, man. If you allow the government to run roughshod over you, then that's what you're going to get. Period. As far as us getting together and designing a alternative energy source that people can use out there, we got all the answers. We know how to do this. It's just a matter of getting into the right machine shop with the right materials and just freaking building it, for Pete's sake. I don't like sitting around arguing over current watts and amps and all the craziness when I'm sitting here telling everybody that voltage is pressure. You can get work done with pressure. You see what I mean? Anybody? No?
Bueller?
Yeah. Bueller? So, I don't want to sit around and argue over terminology. I don't want to argue over whether the government says I can or can't do something. I put myself in a position to where I live where I don't have to deal with the government telling me I can or can't do something. And that's what the rest of the world's got to understand. If you live in a residential area, you're going to have to deal with the government. If you live in the city, you're going to have to deal with the laws of the city. If you live out on your own private property and you stay the heck away from the government and the law enforcement, then you don't have those issues. I ain't paying the judge nothing. Why would I want to give the judge a new jacuzzi? Why would I want to pay his light bill when I'm struggling to pay my own? So, I'm going off the grid. But when I do go off the grid, I'm going off the grid in style. I guarantee you that. Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts.
Going off the grid isn't something hard to accomplish. That's for sure.
Yeah, but see, if you want to keep your wife happy and cool in the summer and hot in the winter, warm in the winter, then you're going to need a certain amount of power, right? In order to generate that certain amount of power, you need some sort of generator, whether it be a diesel generator or a hydrogen generator or whatever, whatever kind you got. If you ain't got a large enough solar panel to match up to the energy hog, which is your house, then your wife's going to be really frustrated. And when your wife's frustrated, hell hath no fury like a woman with sweat running down her forehead in the middle of summer. Alright? So, that's the difference. If you're going to go off the grid, you got to make sure your partner is on board with it. Alright? And to be on board with it, you have to be able to match or surpass the energy usage that you're already up to. And since everything that we got here was bought out there on the market as inefficient as it is, then I got to be able to build something that is going to run this doggone house, the whole thing.
Right, see, so the energy, the crisis, the energy crisis is because we want more and more and more and more. Right, you see, it's only been, what, 100 years, a little over 100 years since the airplane's been made? So, like, we've advanced so much in the last 100 years. But before that, we never had all this. We, you know, like, women can't live without purses, men can't live without golf clubs.
Well, look, man, on what you're saying right there, anybody right now could go out there and find a piece of land and buy it that is not zoned or is private property, and they can live in that tent on that land all they want without ever having to pay any bills. No water bill, no electric bill, no nothing. All right, so that's the easiest way to go. If you want to get completely off the grid, get you a tent and a backpack and do it like the homeless people that choose to be homeless. All right, but for those of you out there who want to be able to live with some luxury, which is air conditioning, a TV, the computers and all that, that means that you either got to bargain with the devil and live in part of the system, or you don't have these luxuries. It's like the whole driver's license issue. You don't need a driver's license. Nobody has to force you to have a driver's license. You chose to have a driver's license. But once you're in that system, you've already agreed to rules of that system, and so now there's where your problem comes in whenever you don't have your driver's license on you when the lawman pulls you over. But you don't see the Amish communities with the driver's license, but they're still traveling around, you know? They're not driving around in vehicles and stuff like that. But regardless, you know, there's ways to go off the doggone grid where you don't have to pay for all the craziness going on. But if you choose to live off the grid using modern technology such as what's all in your house, your heater and all that, you got to have some energy from some direction. And unless you're sitting on a big, huge natural gas pocket, then you're gonna have to figure something out. Wind, solar, or whatever. Our job here on the Mad Science Channel is to figure out how to build the perfect generator that's going to take everything that you already have available. Everybody has sunlight available, otherwise they're freezing their butt off. All right, everybody has wind available. So there's two power sources that we can use. Even when the sun ain't out, the wind's still blowing. Vice versa. You know, and when neither the sun nor the wind's out, there are other storage capabilities where you can store energy for several days until the sun does come back out or the wind starts blowing again. It ain't that we can't. That's the point.
How come you haven't gone off the grid yet?
Because I told you, when I go off the grid, I'm going to do it with style, and everybody else and his brother is going to know exactly how I did it. They're going to know what I used to do it, and they're going to be able to choose whether or not to go off the same doggone way or not. Right now, I got some really beautiful light bills that I can't wait to rub in the faces of all the skeptics out there in this world. Because my last light bill was $551 for 1 month. Alright? In some communities, that's cheap. But in the average Joe community, that's a steep light bill. And so when I go from 551 down to flat old zero, that ought to get some attention, period. So I know it can be done. I'm going to do it. And when I'm ready, I will make dang sure that everybody and his brother knows exactly how I did it, what I used to do it, and we'll be able to decide from that point on whether or not they trust the technology enough to do it themselves. That's why I ain't off the grid. So, any other questions? No? Thomas, you still there? Thomas! I think we lost Thomas.
I just don't see it like being that hard. You make a windmill, put some solar panels up, some A-tracks, I mean, and there you go.
Well, yeah, there you go is the easy part. Now, the financial part is how do you get the money to get these doggone windmills put up in your yard? That's the thing, and that's the reason why most of the folks out there ain't got windmills up in their yard, because they can't afford them. And so, what if you could take a doggone gasoline generator that you already own and be able to run it off of something that isn't gasoline? What if you could run it off of wood gas? Or what if you could run it off of water? All these technologies are readily available. And if you can generate enough high voltage, you could actually use that high voltage, the frequency, to separate the hydrogen and oxygen on demand exactly like Stan Myers was doing it back in the 70s. And so you could run that same doggone generator off of water while you're running your electricity off of that generator. You see what I mean? It's not that you can't do it. It's that the expense of all the machinery and everything necessary to get everything to put out enough energy to run the hogs that we call our houses, that's the trick. Do you think you could run your entire house off a 10 kilovolt generator? Everything like you use already? No? Yeah?
Well, the average house is only 100 amps. You're using what at all times? Okay, the refrigerator's running, freezer, so that's what, 6-7 amps?
Yeah.
So, you know, you throw the TV on, or maybe you leave the computer running all day. What is that? That's nothing. Really, we don't use any power.
All right, so let's say now you got a 2,500 watt generator is all you got. 2,500 watts to work with. That means you can run 2,500 watts of stuff on the standard method by which you use that generator. Now let's say hypothetically you take that 2,500 watts and you do what Gerard Morin was doing and dump that 2,500 watts down into a 50 kV transformer for your initial storage, and then you bleed that 50 kV down into a 25, and now you've got the power that you can run directly off. As long as that 50 kV doesn't go down below half its volume, then that 25 is always going to be full. And so all you're doing is running a 2,500 watt generator and being able to use more energy out of that doggone thing off of the 25 because of the fact that you're not draining it directly off that generator, you're dumping it into a storage bank before you ever even use it. So every single generator out there under the sun already has the capability of, before you take the load directly off of it, dumping it into a massive battery bank, a massive capacitor bank, and storing up a massive amount of energy before you ever even start draining off of it, which is going to make that thing more efficient right out of the gate. You guys agree or disagree on that?
Well, when you ring a transformer, it's just a transformer is like a battery, right? It has a volume, has a mass, so it has a density. So it's like a cup filled with water, and if you tap it, the water will spill out.
So what's your point?
So if you use a 25 kilowatt generator, you're only going to get 25 kilowatts out of the cup.
So why do you need any more than that?
Well, why do you need the cup?
You got to have the storage bank ahead of time to fill that thing up so that you can have... It's like filling your doggone gas tank in your car, man. You can go so far from the time you fill it up till the time that you get to the other side or whatever. But imagine if that gas tank never goes dry. Imagine if on the way down the road, you're literally building, making your own fuel. That's the difference. So, you don't need a massive amount of energy to fill a swimming pool up.
No, no. It's all about the time. If you want 12 gallons per minute, then you get a pump that pumps 12 gallons per minute.
So, let's say, perfect case scenario, you live out on private property, you got access to a couple old transformers, one large one, one small one, and you got a little small gasoline generator, you have a wind generator, you have a solar power, and if you live next to a stream that's constantly moving, you got some hydroelectrics, and all of this energy is funneled into the same storage bank, all right? And so basically what you got going on here is no matter whether the sun's out or the wind's blowing, the water's still rolling down the creek or whatever, you're always putting energy back into that thing, and you can have what they like to call a dump load in case the 50 kV gets too full. You don't want it overpressurizing and overpressurizing the one smaller and so on and so forth, whatever. You just basically have something that's going to drain that energy off and keep it from popping. That's it. But in the meantime, doesn't matter if the sun's out, you're still getting energy from the wind. It doesn't matter if the wind stops blowing, you're still getting energy from the river. One of the three is going to be on at all times. It's going to be dumping energy into that deal. And as long as you're not draining off more than that doggone 25 kV transformer can handle, and the 50 kV never goes dry, then you ain't got no problems. You see what I'm saying here?
I see. I acknowledge what you're saying about a storage capacitor, yes. Because if you want a system, if you want lights running with electricity, the generator has to be running 24/7. But if you have a storage capacitor there, then the generator can take a break.
Yeah, that's it. The alternator only comes on when the battery in your car gets to a certain voltage. And so if you have this thing regulated so that whenever the transformer is completely full, then everything shuts itself off, and then whenever the transformer drops down, then it turns off on, turns everything back on and allows the energy to flow through there. That's all you need.
It's the same thing as a hot water tank.
Yeah. If you got a massive battery bank, and if you can't build a battery by now, then I don't know what to say, because it's so super simple to build a battery. Heck, pickling salt, which you use for making canned foods or whatever. You can take that pickling salt and a couple plates of lead, and bam, you got a battery.
Actually, your own spit makes a good battery.
Well, there you go. But either way, you know, going out and recycling junk and understanding the difference between parallel and series, you know, if you want to step a voltage up, you put two batteries in series with each other. If you want to maintain the same voltage, you put them in parallel. But that two batteries together gives you more time to run than that one battery by itself. You see what I mean?
Right, more surface area.
So, if you're going to go off the grid, then you need to know that you got to have a storage capability for whenever nature isn't doing nothing. When nature's completely balanced out, ain't nothing happening, no wind blowing, no sound, no nothing, which is, what, never? Then you ain't going to have no power. Unless you figure out how to throw nature off balance, such as using like a Slayer exciter or a Tesla coil or a static generator.
Or a bell.
Yeah. That's it, man. It's that simple. Is Thomas still there? Did we lose your brother?
No, too much going on there, man. Too much.
Well, what's your thoughts?
just a few, a little bit ago, you said you can't do things because of this and that and the other thing, like, you know, you don't have manufacturing skills, you don't have this, you don't have that, but then you just chided everybody a minute ago, oh, you can make a battery with pickling salt. Don't tell me you can't. It's easy to go off the grid.
You can. You can make it out of junk. You can. That's what I've been doing all along.
Then apply that to yourself and do it. Get the video camera out there and record it all, too, like you were talking about.
That's what I've been doing on my YouTube channel for several years now, showing everybody little pieces.
So it isn't as easy as that because you're still not off the grid.
What I'm trying to
say.
It takes time.
Just like you said, you just need to go back to what you said before. One light bulb at a time. Just don't focus about going off the grid. Just focus on taking one light bulb off the grid at a time, you know?
Okay, let me try to...
Nobody out there needs to try to basically do it all at once unless they have the resources to do it.
Let me try to clarify. Now, in order to get this hog off the grid, which is my house, this energy hog, I have to have a certain piece of machinery that's going to be the equivalence of what I need. Now, I can go out and buy or even get free and junk batteries all day long, every day. Once I get a massive amount of freaking junk batteries and one inverter that's able to run this hog, then I could go off the grid just like that. But that's not what I want to do. I want to build a device that will produce, that will move energy rapidly enough to store in the capacity that is able to run a large enough inverter that will run this house on demand. And once that is accomplished, then I can share that information with everybody and his brother out there at the same exact time that I unplug mine from the power pole. That information be readily available for everybody and his brother out there to choose to either use it or not use it. In order for me to build that to be precision enough and to have all the schematics necessary, all the diagrams necessary, then I need to get access to other people with the technology and the tools to make this thing perfect. All right, now I can make it out of junk. Junk ain't going to hold up. You see what I'm saying? That's the difference. If I could get 1 million car batteries out there, I'd go off the grid tomorrow. Anybody want to donate a car battery? Send me a 12-volt car battery to put it in my yard. I don't care, dead ones, live ones. It don't matter.
On the grassy ones?
Just keep it off my lawn.
Now you want something free, and there's restrictions on how they're allowed to give it to you.
Look, I don't want, like, big old dead spot right in the middle of my yard.
Well, then you need to get up there and get it off the lawn before it has a chance to leave a dead spot.
Oh, it will be. As soon as they, like, set it on the driveway, I just, like, when I pull in, I'll put it in the trunk and drive it down and hook it to the bank. Keep logging in how many batteries is connected, how long I can run off those batteries. See, that's the whole deal. Everybody thinks you got to have this massive solar array in order to charge those batteries. You don't. It's going to take a lot longer to charge it with just a 45-watt panel, but it is more than provable that you can charge it with less. I've already done it. In my video called Unsubscribe, I've done it. All right? All I need is the batteries. I could hook one 45-watt solar panel into 1 million batteries and be able to charge those batteries up. Once those batteries are fully charged...
Well, I think you need to take a step back and realize you can't tell people how they can help you and start accepting if somebody offers to send you money to go pick up some batteries. Don't be so resistant to accepting help depending on how the help comes. If you're willing to take help in any way, then you should be willing to take help in every way. That's not saying go out and beg for it. That's just saying, you know, if somebody contacts you and says, hey, I want to send you a couple $100 to help you move or get close to what you're doing, even if you can't do the work yourself, here's a couple $100. Go find a machinist and pay them to do it then, since, you know, you can't get somebody with machining skills local to you to help you out. Or here's a couple $100. Make a trip to somebody that is willing to help you without charging you, but they're too far away. Now they're not too far away because you're a couple $100 closer to them.
Or send me a schematic and pay for the shipping, and I'll mill it or lathe it.
Right, there you go.
Whatever. Here, you know,
that gets a lot of shipping done.
Exactly. You know, I have all those tools. I have everything from forging to polishing, from laser cutters to water cutters to...
Don't make people pull shenanigans in order to basically help you out. Like, you know, sending something to you and saying it's not yours.
Well, you know,
it belongs to everybody. So you're just the caretaker to use it. You know what I mean?
Do you know how many people out there are willing to take advantage of other people and then turn around and not give them what?
Doesn't matter. Just don't be one of them.
I ain't one of them.
Don't take advantage. Just take what people are willing to give you and do what they ask you to do with it. You know what I'm saying? If you do what they ask you to do with it, then you have fulfilled your obligation and you have not taken advantage of anybody. You haven't lied to anybody. Tell them that you're going to get them into heaven if they send it to you, right?
Nope.
You haven't told them that you're going to send them a unit because you don't have the money to do that, right? If you post the schematics and the designs and the video and all the information you possibly can to help other people achieve it, you've done your part. You haven't taken it. If you've done your part, you haven't taken advantage of somebody. You're not prying money out of you know, elderly women's hands that basically need it to pay for, you know, their electric bill. By scaring them into thinking they're gonna, you know, burn for eternity or something. You haven't done anything wrong. Even if somebody sends you $10,000 today, if they know why they're sending it to you and you haven't used any manipulation to get them to send it to you, you have done nothing wrong. You got to get past that step, man. You want everybody to work together, but you're not willing to work with anybody that if it doesn't fit within your criteria, because you've got this view from that is another holdback from all these people who have been ripping people off. They've also now because you're not willing to help take other people's help because you're afraid you'll take advantage of them, you have been ripped off by those same people that took people's money and ran with it. They just used a different method of ripping you off. They ripped you off psychologically. They damaged you psychologically. You got to heal that. That's the only way we can work together, is if we're all healed and whole.
Okay, I agree with your concept. So where do we go to from there? I just want to make sure that nobody gets screwed over. Look, there's used to be in the old days, lead acid batteries had a label right on the side of it that said not to arc these batteries across, because if you did, then the batteries, when they're being used, will produce hydrogen inside that battery. And so with that said, if there wasn't a sealed lead acid battery, then a regular lead acid battery would actually off gas hydrogen. So what would be to stop you from taking a massive battery bank, an old style lead acid battery bank, and tapping into those vents to send those down into a bubbler system, which in turn you send in through a flashback arrestor, so that when that hydrogen moves from the battery over into the bubbler and down through the flashback arrestor and so on down into the deal, that you could actually store that hydrogen that is off-gassing from the battery, and then be able to modify those same batteries so that the electrolyte inside the battery will always be maintained. You'll always have fresh electrolyte in there. It'll pump it out and recirculate it and so on down the line, so the battery will never go dry. You follow me so far? Hello? No? I lost everybody. Alright. So anyway, basically, you turn that doggone battery, the same battery that you're using, into a hydrogen cell. And you take that hydrogen off of that, and you can use that hydrogen to run a generator that would run off of the stored hydrogen to actually put juice back into that battery at some point. What do you guys think? Hello?
Try not to. It gets me in trouble.
Get you in trouble. Oh, man.
I don't know. To me, getting electricity is like just tapping into sound.
Well, then use sound to do it.
What I'm doing, you know?
and I'm gonna use plasma. That's the technology I'm interested in. So there's tons of different ways out there. And when everybody's ready, I guess we'll start putting it together. You know, I talked about last week, and I actually talked to some people in my community about every community out there has got an empty building somewhere that ain't being used. And if that community was willing to invest the building into a laboratory, I'd be willing to go to any laboratory. And when people's ready to start working on it and help everybody troubleshoot stuff, I don't have all the answers, but I got some of them. And together, putting all this stuff together in an actual working device is the only way I see any of this is ever going to get accomplished. So I've been trying to put together the Dream Team. And simple as that sounds, it's not. It's not simple to put together the Dream Team, because you always have people that want to disagree with everything under the sun. I want these people...
It's kind of hard to disagree if you can't even overcome the distance, though.
Well, there's still...
That's the biggest thing that needs to be accomplished, is just overcoming the distance.
Justin,
you know,
mentioned if I could send him schematics for a design that he could mill it out with his equipment, all right? And then I'd pay the shipping and handling and bring it back, all right? Well, we still have that option. We don't actually need a physical building, per se, as far as for a massive group to start. But at some point in time, if you had one in your community... And you could gather up people in your community that had skill sets that, you know, would complement what you already know how to do. That's the Dream Team. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, but a good start is basically what we're talking about, networking like we're doing now. I don't want somebody whipping out massive donations, sending them like to the Keshe Foundation and getting screwed out of their doggone money. If somebody, like what you mentioned, if they're going to get what they paid for, if they believe in what we're talking about, and they want to see a certain result, like, let's say somebody says, well, what could you do with 100 batteries? And I tell them what I could do with 100 batteries, and I could prove it by the videos and the testing and all that, what I'd do with that 100 batteries. I'd hook it to a massive inverter and take most of my house off the grid and then basically save my electricity, and you watch the electric bill drop down to the dirt. What could you do with 100 solar panels? I mean, if you got a large enough solar array, if you got the money to afford one, that's the way to go right out of the gate, because you're already capable of storing a lot of that energy, and a lot of it can be used on demand. I've actually watched as people had to shut down a number of solar panels because they were overproducing electricity. You see what I'm saying? But if somebody...
Actually, there are buildings that have caught on fire up in Boston that it was basically because they were producing too much electricity for the wiring that they had wired it up with.
Yeah.
It heated the wires up and caused them to catch on fire.
So if you go off the grid, you got to understand that energy's going to keep coming in as long as that sun's out. And you have to set you up some sort of safety fallback deal for if the voltage gets too high or the current gets too high, it immediately maybe drops a shade in front of the doggone solar panel to shut them down. Turns them away from the sun or whatever. But that's even more proof of what I've been saying all along. If somebody's house is catching on fire because they didn't put the right wiring in there, then that's a whole lot of energy going through there. That's a whole lot of amperage. So, it's not that it can't be done. So, where do we go to from here? I want to build a plasma reactor. I want to make one out of thick enough glass that you can actually see the physical reaction as far as the gas being energized into the plasma state. The mercury arc rectifier was made out of glass. It looked like a glass octopus. And you could actually see when the mercury arc rectifier was working that you could see visible light inside there. And so I want to actually be able to see the reaction going on in there, the difference in the light of the energy being put in and what's going on inside that tube. And that's for research purposes only. It is fully possible to build one that isn't made out of glass. It would probably be a heck of a lot easier to do, but you wouldn't be able to see that visible light inside that deal. You wouldn't be able to see that reaction occurring inside the reactor because it's all closed in. The exact same concept that I am talking about is used in every single microwave oven out there. If you look at the magnetron inside of a microwave oven, what you are actually looking at is the equivalence of a light bulb with no glass. It's as simple as that. You got two probes, the energy's coming off of the high voltage transformer into a tungsten element inside there. If that thing was made out of glass, you would literally see it light up like a 100 watt light bulb or brighter, maybe even like a halogen light bulb. It would be really bright inside there. One that tungsten element's heated up, it releases electrons inside that vacuum, which in turn begin to start spinning by the first magnet on that magnetron. And so when those electrons start to spin looking for a place to go, on the other end of that magnetron is a doggone little disc that has a bunch of little tiny holes inside there that the electrons get trapped in and begin to spin yet even faster. Alright, then on the other side you have another magnet which is facing in the same, pretty much the same direction as the magnet on the other side, which is drawing that electron flow into the antenna system of the magnetron itself. When it's all said and done, you get a short, fast radio wave that's coming out of the antenna out of the other side, which is called a microwave. So, what I'm talking about as far as the plasma reactor could be built on a small scale using just the magnetrons alone to prove the concept. But I don't want a microwave coming out the other side. So I need a positive and a negative on the other side to use just like the mercury arc rectifier did, so that I can pull that energy instead of in the form of a microwave off as DC current. You see what I'm talking about? Yeah? No? Y'all killing me, man.
I'm still waiting all the way back on that other track that you left me on, man. You said one thing and then jumped straight to another and never finished it off, so.
Which track?
The track about, how to get to that point.
Alright, well, how to get to that point is you're telling me I need to accept people's money for...
No, I didn't say that. I said you need to accept their help and not put any limits on how they decide to help. I mean, if they can't show up to your door because they live 4,000 miles away to drop a battery off on you, but they want to send you $5 or $10 because they really want you to have that battery, then you need to stop being so restrictive over, how they send you that battery, whether they send it to you in dollars or they come by and sit it on your lawn and you have to come out and get it.
Alright, so what if I put a mediator in between me and the funds, that the mediator will ensure that if it's said that there's supposed to be a battery bought with these funds, that battery is bought with those funds?
Well, there is a real easy mediator for that. It's called YouTube. Record yourself getting it.
Yeah, there's a good.
They do YouTube videos all day long called unboxing videos. It gives people a chance to share in on, the event. But it also acts as a documentation in the situation you're talking about. so that way nobody's questioning whether you did the right thing or not.
Yeah, because the last thing I need is trolls coming around talking about how I'm ripping everybody off. I've never asked anybody for anything. I've only gave away information. And so they don't have that to try to hold over my channel or my radio show or anything like that. Never ask anybody for nothing. And when I say free energy, I mean free energy. But if somebody wants to invest in the idea to prove that what I'm saying is true, then I think I could work with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would just want to do it in such a manner that no matter what anybody says, there was no ifs, ands, or buts. They sent me money for a battery. A battery was bought and utilized exactly the way it was said it was going to be used. Because I'm tired of all these knuckleheads out there ripping people off, man. That's why I keep telling everybody, don't buy any free or alternative energy plans from anybody. You know? Unless you are 100% positive that this thing works and you've done all the research and you know it works. And don't pay for nothing. Because all the information about everything we've talked about is all over the internet. And all these little anomalies that I keep pointing out, they're just pieces of the puzzle. You take those pieces of the puzzle, you put them together, and now you got a Swiss watch with all the gears in it. You know? That's all I've been saying. So we back on track again, or what?
No, I don't know, man. We got a lot of tracks. You jumped across. You left me way, way back there. I couldn't get past that point.
All right. Well, how do we fix it?
Well, I don't know. What was the next track, you know?
The next track was how we're going to get an actual physical device where people don't actually have to travel to a centralized shop to do it. We got UPS and we got Federal Express. I think is that the right one?
Everybody you're naming takes dollars. They don't take anything else in exchange. They don't take goodwill in exchange. So you need to basically set something up where people can put funding toward it and send a little note on what they what they wanted to go towards. PayPal button or something like that. When you send money through PayPal, it definitely lets people know, hey, you have an option to send them a message, too. So if they want to send, say, $1,000, but they want you to spend that specifically on plasma research, or they want you to get a little mini mill, or they want you to, you know, buy batteries with it, they can tell you what they want you to use it for. And it leaves you an option that if you've already got that particular task taken care of, you can refund the money, and along with a message it says we've already taken care of that.
All right, and then
cost nobody a nickel, you know.
Then any change left over, I could ship right back to them.
Mm-hmm.
If I buy it cheaper than I planned, then I could send the rest back to them. That
exactly.
All I want out of this whole deal is honesty, man. I don't want nobody trying to put off like old Shaziz is out trying to steal from people. You know.
But once you get past the point of setting something up that you are psychologically comfortable with, you also have to make the next step and not lose your train of thought. God, I forgot where I was going now, see? I'm tripping over these tracks you left me over here behind, man. Clean your tracks up, man. Bust out that brush and wipe them footy tracks up off of my desert.
Alright, so my first project that I want to seriously get done is that plasma reactor. I built the first one, and the materials that I built the first one wasn't able to hold up to it.
If you're using something that's transparent, made out of glass, it's not going to hold up. It's never going to hold up. Have you looked to see what temperature plasma gets up to the second it starts turning into plasma?
Well, you have
to use magnetic mirrors.
I was going to say, and then looked at the temperature that it takes to melt anything that you've been discussing using.
Well, and I think that's why those magnetrons are made out of steel like they are. Now, is there a means by which we could actually take a magnetron and not get microwaves out the other end, but be able to transfer that energy out the other end? Maybe run two magnetrons in parallel.
Well, you have to use magnetic mirrors to control.
To control what?
Your plasma. Right, because it'll blow right through that glass.
Well, and I've seen that just, on a small scale.
Just like a Tesla coil, right? When you wrap a coil around a glass bottle, you're giving that glass bottle an inductance value. So if you send something through it, that magnetic field that you're creating, the plasma will be guided. You see, it can't expand and try to go to its equilibrium and pop out of the glass. Yeah.
Well,
because it's still being forced down the center.
As long as that energy is being drained off as fast as you're basically storing it inside that reactor, then you don't have a problem. See, my problem was I hit that reactor with 20 kV and
it's very hot.
Cracked it.
Very hot. So you have to guide that heat.
And so if I build the second one with thicker glass and I don't pressurize it, I don't allow the voltage to get that high to pressurize it, I can move that energy away. As long as I can regulate the energy input and the energy output of that deal, then I wouldn't have the problem that I had before. That was one of the learning curves of building that reactor the way that I built it the first time around.
Right, but when you make magnetic mirrors, as they call them, right, You're guiding that plasma. You're spinning that plasma, so it actually increases its velocity by the time it leaves there.
Well,
if you don't put mirrors, coils around your glass tube, it's always going to crack.
I can do this on a really super small scale and just show people how I'm talking about. So the first one I can pay for myself because it's the tools necessary I probably already got the majority of, and I'll just show everybody a video of the energy transfer the way that I'm talking about so that they can understand. And from that point on, if enough people take interest in it, then I will accept the help to build a working device. What do you think? Is that a legitimate compromise, Thomas?
Let's see, it's potential to at least get the ball rolling.
Alright, well, I have the capability.
I don't think magnetic mirrors are going to make enough of a difference, though, without a tremendous amount of dumped energy into it when you're talking about 3,000 degrees.
Well, I'm talking about...
And something it can only handle up to 1,200 degrees.
I'm talking about using the energy to the point... As long as that energy is coming away from it, you don't have to worry about it over-pressurizing.
We're not talking about over-pressurizing. I'm talking about reaching a temperature that causes it to melt.
Yeah.
The second it melts, or even starts getting warm to where it's getting close to its glassy point, it's going to basically... any amount of pressure is going to cause it to collapse or expand.
Yeah. Well,
way to carry that heat away as fast as it's being generated near the surface.
And I think that there's multiple ways to actually take that heat away from that plasma while it's being generated. One of which is to transfer it into water. Now, what the melting temperature of copper is, or stainless, or the best tubing to actually make it out of, that's going to be another testing purpose. But once again, I still need to be able to build some system to where I can circulate water into the reactor where the plasma is actually surrounding the tubing. That way the heat from that plasma heats up the copper and transfers that energy into the water to heat the water. You see what I'm saying? And if I can get that manufactured, I can prove this overnight. It ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Even a fluorescent bulb gets warm. Put your hand up on a fluorescent bulb, you'll find out that it gets warm. There's heat generated inside there. And so if I use something such as argon, and the argon surrounding some coils inside there, one of the coils being used for the positive, the other coil being used for the negative, I can take heat away from the plasma via that transfer into the copper and whatever liquid I am circulating inside there. The other portion is just like the mercury arc rectifier, now I have the anodes and cathodes necessary for the transfer of the electron flow out the other side. So I get the rectifier portion of the mercury arc rectifier by doing that. So imagine two coils of copper tubing side by side, the plasma surrounding that. That's my positive and my negative out on there. Alright? Plus I'm able to circulate water through both of these at the same exact time. Or whatever liquid I want to heat up. Do you understand what I'm saying? That needs to be where it won't leak. That's the problem. There's where the manufacturing portion comes in. If somebody can melt glass and be able to seal those tubes to where they can come out the side, and I have a way to put the argon in and a way to evacuate the chamber, I don't need a perfect vacuum, but I need it to be a sealed vacuum. If you understand what I'm trying to point out here.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine a jar. And inside this jar, at one end, you have a field where I can run the argon in, and you have on the opposite side a vacuum that can draw the atmosphere out of there just enough to replace the atmosphere with just argon. And I can actually adjust the pressure inside there to get the best results as far as when I'm putting my energy into that reactor. So the two copper tubes, the coils that are coming out as far as your output side, you also have to have on either end of the jar your input side, so that the high voltage connected from the generator head can go into the gas to begin to energize the gas into the plasma state. Once that's in the plasma state, now I have the high voltage AC coming in, rectified into high voltage DC going out the other side, just like the mercury arc rectifier. With exception is, if you took the mercury arc rectifier and was able to do exactly what I'm talking about, you could heat water using that reaction that's going on inside there, transferring that energy away from it. And at the same time, be able to pull high voltage DC off of it to use to charge batteries. It's a really simple concept. It's just to build it. That's the problem. So who out there knows how to blow glass to build a chamber? Or even if, see, that was the key difference between being able to build it out of something that had glass, was that you need to be able to separate a good enough insulator between all the output sides and all the input sides so that nothing's shorting out. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
Because that high voltage will find a path through the insulation of the wire if the inputs are too close together. And it'll burn right through the insulation. I ain't found an insulation outside of ceramic that would that would be able to withstand that kind of voltage. That's the key. So, the glass is for the physical, so you can see inside the thing, to see the reaction occurring. The glass is also for the insulation factor to keep the positive and the negative input from shorting each other out, and to keep the output on the other side from shorting each other out. Does that make sense? Yeah? No? This is painful, man. Alright, folks. That's, I don't know. Best I can say is I'll build it on a small scale. I'll prove what I'm saying on a small scale. And if anybody understands by then what I'm talking about, on a small scale, the best I can do is transfer the energy off of a generator, change the energy into plasma, and then bring it back into electricity again. On a large scale, I'll be able to heat water with it and literally build a plasma water heater. And it's all scientific provable. It's just about building it. So you guys got any other thoughts?
No? I'm trying to see if there's a way to basically get an affordable transparent tube that's made out of aluminum oxide. Because the aluminum oxide could handle the temperature that the plasma is hitting, and if it's thick enough, it can handle the pressure you're talking about. And aluminum oxide is basically what a sapphire is made out of, so we know it can be made transparent. You get rid of all the impurities, the sapphire is completely clear like a piece of glass. Higher refraction index, but if it's just two flat walls running around in a circular form, should have no problem being able to look through it and see what's going on the inside of it.
Yeah, and that's the key to show everybody exactly what's occurring inside there. I mean, it's easy enough to explain, for me anyway, how a magnetron works, but for somebody to actually physically see it, you have to understand what's going on inside there. And the easiest way that I can explain what's going on inside there is to look up at any tungsten element light bulb. Look up at any fluorescent light bulb. You're getting visible light. Light is heat. Heat is light. Vice versa. That's what physics says. And so, imagine if you had your 100-watt light bulb that had a tube inside there that you could circulate any liquid through there. You'd still be able to use the light bulb for a light bulb, but at the same time, you could take that heat and use that heat. There's a lot of heat come off a 100-watt light bulb. And you can take that heat, circulate it through that light bulb, still be able to use the light, and take that heat, transfer it down into your hot water heater, and for the same 100-watt light bulb that you use to run your deal, you can heat your hot water at the same exact time. That's what this plasma reactor would be capable of doing. Using it in its most efficient manner. You're getting the light, you're getting the heat, no waste of nothing. Believe it or not, 100 watt light bulb in your room will actually raise the temperature in your room. Try it sometime. Set your temperature of your room, check it out with all the lights off, then turn that one light bulb on, and watch as the temperature in your room will finally start raising up to where it actually gets warm in your room off of one light bulb. And once that temperature is up there, unless there's a opposing force, a colder temperature outside that makes it have to work harder, that light bulb will maintain that temperature as long as it's on. Now, if you threw perfect insulation in your house, you could heat your doggone entire house with a light bulb. It's that simple. It's going to take you a long time to get it up to temperature, and once you got it up to temperature, it doesn't take nothing to maintain it. That's the whole deal. Do you think I'm wrong?
Well, you keep talking about plasma, so I'm trying to look up on it to catch up with you. So,
well, find out the full operating temperature of plasma itself inside there, you know. The Mercury arc rectifier is probably the best example that I've been able to give as far as plasma technology, because it was a plasma reactor. Simple as that, you know. And a lot of people were hollering about how it might be putting off X-rays or gamma rays, all this blah, blah, whatever. If that's the case, then you should be able to surround that and retrieve those X-rays or gamma rays and use that energy as it's being wasted out the side of the glass. All of it's storable energy. And everything I've been saying to this entire point was being able to use everything in its maximum efficiency so that that generator doesn't have to use a gallon of gas an hour. It'd be able to use a whole lot less because it's not working near as hard. If you turn a gasoline generator from using a gallon an hour down to a half a gallon an hour, that's pretty doggone efficient if you ask me. The plasma reactor that I'm talking about would take any existing generator and make it so much more efficient than draining the energy directly off of the doggone generator head. Because you're not allowing that energy to flow back into that generator head. You're changing the energy to a completely different form and moving it away from it, and then using that energy in the form of heat and light and electricity out the other side. When two magnetic fields come in contact with each other, they become one field. The stronger field usually wins out. But if you keep those two magnetic fields separate from each other, then you're not invoking Lenz's law. You ain't going to get that braking effect on the generator. And you're not going to be working that generator harder than it has to in order to give you the energy that you want. That's the simple of it.
So are you trying to say that we set up a generator that doesn't have coils, instead it just has plasma that the magnets are, or a gas that the magnets are spinning past to create heat by turning it into plasma?
Well, that would
and
be,
then using the heat to turn to generate electricity through like a steam turbine or something?
Well, that would be pretty high tech, but yeah, I think that would be possible, but that's not exactly what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is using a generator exactly the way that it was intended on, to have the magnetic field created and start the electron flow. You allow the electron flow to go into the gas as opposed to a direct short circuit, which would be a light bulb.
Well, then you've just invoked Lenz's law, because the second you have electricity flowing through those coils, it's going to create the EMF or a flyback effect that's going to push back on the magnetic field of the magnet.
Once you create potential difference, then that's Lenz's law.
You guys are...
Right, with the gas, if you're generating that magnetic field into a gas, the gas can freely move around. It's going to move before... it's going to produce less resistance. The wire, on the other hand, if you're generating a magnetic field by running electricity through it, if it's mounted firmly so that it doesn't dislodge and end up breaking, then it's going to put all that energy back into the magnet and try to stop the magnet from turning.
You
don't have to worry about that with the gas. So the gas is meant to be freely flowing, whether it's in a plasma state or it's still in a gas state.
It's not going to bog that generator down. In any form or fashion, it's not going to bog that generator down. It's not physically possible to bog that generator down. I know this for a fact. Raymond and I proved it. We did it right out here in my yard. We ran that X13 motor up to, I don't remember how many RPMs, but we took the energy off of that. We was creating plasma out of the back of that X13, and it ran smooth as all get out. The moment the temperature rose up inside that doggone deal enough to cause the thermal contacts inside that fluorescent bulb starter to do their thing to bend and make the connection, that thing dropped right on its face, and the 100-watt light bulb came on twice as bright as it would have beforehand. But until that direct connection to that light bulb occurred, that generator didn't bog down in the least. That's the key.
Well, that means you didn't have electrons flowing through there.
Well, then whatever it is that actually is electricity, it was being done in that instant. But we had visible light and we had heat coming off of that generator
here. You're saying, though, it bogged down as soon as the light came on, right?
It bogged down the moment that thermal switch inside that fluorescent bulb starter made contact and turned on a 150-watt light bulb.
Right. Meaning the second you had enough pressure built up so that the volume could start flowing, that's whenever you started generating a magnetic field inside that generator head, because there were electrons flowing through those copper coils.
Going right back to the generator, once that thermal switch turned on, made connection, it lit up the 100-watt light bulb, and that generator head dropped down on its face. Now, during the plasma state of the deal, the generator didn't lose a lick. Still had the plasma, still had the heat, it didn't lose a lick. There wasn't no electricity flowing back into those coils. And so, we had literal plasma going on. We had light and heat going on right there without bogging that generator down. Inside those fluorescent bulb starters is a little thermal switch that is activated by heat. When that gas is energized to the plasma, it heats up that thermal switch. The thermal switch closes and makes the circuit, and then it allows the electricity to flow through that circuit, in through the light bulb, and back down into the generator, and that's when Lenz's law kicked in. Otherwise, during the plasma state, that generator never bogged down once. That's the key. So, you take that energy away in the form of plasma, as long as you're not allowing a direct flow right back into that same generator head, you will never bog that generator down. That's what I'm saying. I've already told everybody how to do it. And anybody can prove me wrong by going out there building one of their own. It's that simple. I've already given away the secret of how I intend on lighting up my entire house without ever even making that generator work even remotely hard. So, anybody out there within earshot of this radio station who understands the concept of what I just explained to them can take that idea and run with it. They can go out there and patent a doggone idea and steal it for as I care. I don't care. That's not going to stop me from using it. And it shouldn't stop the world from using it. It simply says in the laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. But it can be changed. It can be manipulated and changed back again. And so, if you want the energy that's coming out of that generator, whatever it is, whatever it scientifically, whatever electricity really is, whether it's a wave or a vibration or whatever, if you want that energy off of that generator without making that generator have the adverse effect, which is Lenz's law, which acts like a brake on the armature and starts to slow it down, making whatever driving force on the opposite side work twice as hard or even harder depending on how many lights you want to turn on, then you need to change that energy so that that generator doesn't have that effect any longer. And the way to do that is to take whatever that energy is that comes out of the generator head, send it through an inert gas, a noble gas, whatever you want to call it, argon, helium, halogen, neon, or whatever, whichever gas you choose. Send it in there, turn it into plasma, and then take your energy off the plasma from that point on, and then you ain't got that problem anymore.
What is plasma?
It's heat, it's light. It's as simple as that. Light is heat. Heat is light. It's all this friction built up of these argon electrons smashing into each other. As they're smashing
actually,
into each other.
From what I've been looking at, it's actually any substance that has an overabundance of electrons and doesn't have an atom pairing capability to where it's going to bond to another atom. So you can't charge hydrogen and oxygen mixing together into a plasma state without getting water vapor out of it. But if you take just pure hydrogen and pump it full of electrons, you'll get plasma.
Yeah. But either way, while those little hydrogen atoms are in there bouncing around inside that doggone chamber, it's producing friction, which in turn is producing heat, which is producing light, because they ain't got nowhere to go. They're trapped. And the more you agitate the crud out of them, the hotter it's going to get, to the point where you pressurize the inside of that chamber so much that it's going to pop like a balloon. That one time that I had that one little tiny, it was a tube out of a radio. One of the old vacuum tubes out of a radio. I energized that thing with 20,000 volts of electricity off of a Beckett oil burner igniter to the extent that it literally burnt a perfect round hole in the side of that glass. It got that hot that it literally melted a perfect round hole in the side of that glass. But the key of that whole deal was the energy that was released at the time when that thing depressurized that tube. It lit up everything in my lab. Anything that had gas in it, anything, fluorescent bulbs or whatever, it lit it up. So that's what I'm talking about. It's kind of like the implosion that you get off of a small amount of hydrogen. You'd be surprised at how much power hydrogen actually has. We did a video called Hydrogen Danger, and the acoustic wave that came off of that implosion was so loud that the camera couldn't keep up with the noise, that all you hear in the video was a pew sound. In reality, it sounded like a cannon going off. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, no? Somebody got a thought? Do-do-do-do-do.
No, not really.
So, basically, I'm saying to everybody out there, just try it. There was an individual out there who did a YouTube video some time back where he took some aluminum tape. He put the aluminum tape with the actual paper backing on the aluminum tape around the fluorescent bulb, energized the fluorescent bulb, and literally made a capacitor, adjustable, a variable capacitor out of a fluorescent bulb. So how did that energy transfer from that plasma to the glass to give him high voltage DC out that aluminum? You see what I'm saying?
You can pass plasma through a bulb and put a coil on the outside of it and get energy off of that coil.
That's right. That's what I've been saying.
But you don't need a vacuum tube at all to do that. You can do reverse. You can send AC waveform in a coil around a tube, and one end of the tube would be a cathode, the other end would be an anode, and it would turn into a direct current.
The key to my device that I'm talking about building, that I have built already, that I have already tested, that I know fully functions, is that everything is contained inside the reactor so that there's no outside influence, such as the difference between an open air spark gap on a Tesla coil and a vacuum spark gap on a Tesla coil. If you note that whenever they do like the air quenching of the spark gap, all that's doing is basically putting a steady amount of pressure across there that will stabilize that frequency as it's jumping across that spark gap. There's nothing else fancy going on there. Inside a vacuum, it's already set. It's already set in stone. There's nothing inside that vacuum that is going to interact, such as atmosphere from the outside, with that spark leaping across that gap. And so with a set distance across the vacuum, you'll have that set frequency of that spark right there. That's why a vacuum spark gap works consistent. Whereas an open air spark gap, you have to continuously tune it, because there might be more humidity in the room, and there might be more dust in the room. It's going to change the frequency as that energy is jumping across there. It doesn't have a clear path, if you understand what I'm saying.
The volume changes, right? Like you're saying, of the water, right? And any tubular oscillator is the same thing. Vibratory oscillator, right? You're only moving the pressure around in that one area. You're not moving the pressure on all of the area.
But if it's open air, then it's going to be affected by anything in the air.
Right, it's easier to carry out an amplitude in a chamber than it is in the open air, because it will diminish, right? When you have it in a tube, it has nowhere to go. The propagation of that vibration or electricity or particles or electrons or whatever you want to call it can't go. It can't propagate outwards.
It wouldn't
obey the inverse square law.
The whole
because it's guided, like a wave guide, right?
The whole purpose of the plasma reactor, as far as the plasma itself, is for stability. Now, I can actually change the frequency range coming out the other end of it by the input side. on the input side, I can turn the power up or down to speed up or slow down those electrons. So I can use it like a radio tuner, like a variable capacitor or potentiometer or variac, and speed up and slow down to actually control the temperature of that plasma inside there. Then on the output side, whatever frequency range that I need on the output side, I can just from the input side to speed those things up to their maximum and get the highest frequency out the other side as far as the electricity that's coming out the other side. You see what I'm saying? Hello?
I'm here.
It's basically the equivalent of one of the motor controllers that you put on an electric motor to speed it up and slow it down.
Well, you can put a magnet on a motor to speed it up or slow it down.
Either way,
right?
This would be a universal device that could plug into any existing generator, any existing solar panel, any existing power source of any source whatsoever. That's going to take the energy, instead of using it in the direct sense like we use it right now, put it into a completely different form, so that system isn't taxed before it ever even gets that, before that energy gets transferred and used. That's why I'm talking about. That's why I was talking about how today I was talking about the transfer of energy, to moving the energy to where you want it. You know, the blowing up a balloon, taking the air from your lungs, transferring the energy from your lungs into the doggone balloon. Keep blowing on that balloon long enough and that balloon's going to pop right in your face. Same thing with water, you know. You can only fill the pool so full. What I'm saying, there isn't science fiction. It's science fact. And all you're doing, no matter what you're doing, is moving energy from one point to the next. Nature will always try to balance itself out. Once you fill that pool up, if you got a leak in that pool, if there's some place for that energy, the pressure of that water to go, nature's going to drain it right out until it all goes back to its level, wherever its level is. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. And if people want to build it, then we can build it. Try it. Get you a couple spectrum tubes with any gas you want in them. hook them to a power source such as a generator head. When you run that power source through those spectrum tubes, you're going to get plasma inside there. And that plasma is generating light and it's generating heat. If you want to pull that light and heat off of there, then it's just about modifying a different spectrum tube that has some sort of conduit inside it that will allow you to circulate water through there and take the heat off of that plasma. But either way, that generator will never bog down because of that plasma. Never. When the mercury arc rectifier first was turned on, the generator, I would have loved to have been standing next to that generator, because that generator would have dropped to its face because it would have had a dead short right out of the gate because of that liquid mercury, which is literally liquid metal. And all that electron flow, all the whatever it is that you call electricity, went right out into that mercury, right back into that generator head, invoked Lenz's law, and basically acted like a brake on that armature. Since the power coming in was able to overcome it, it literally caused the doggone dead short to heat that mercury up to the point where it vaporized in the gas. And since the energy was still coming in, it energized that mercury vapor into the plasma state. And from that point on, that thing didn't bog down. But in the meantime, the first start of that dang thing, it dropped it on its face. Anybody out there want to deny it? I want to see you get a hold of a mercury arc rectifier and test what I just said. And see if I'm wrong. It's as simple as that. So, that's what I'm talking about doing. Those folks out there who want to work on hydrogen technology, that's cool. Wind power, that's cool. Solar, sound, I don't care where you get your energy from. Once you understand how to transfer it or use it or whatever, regardless, I'm still going to build the plasma reactor, and I'm still going to prove the concept, because that system will plug into any of your systems that you build and make it more efficient, period. And efficiency means you use less fuel. And efficiency means there's less waste. So if you can take an internal combustion engine and use all the waste heat off of it to basically supplement the system, and the thing don't have to use as much gas, you know, isn't that what everybody's talking about? Clean alternative energy? You know, we're boiling water with radioactive rods. Alright, well, whatever floats your boat, if something goes wrong, then you got an issue. But with a noble gas, neon, halogen, freon, or whatever, you don't have that issue. Because if the thing pops, it shuts itself down. Period. And you ain't got all the radiation to worry about. Alright, well, that's pretty much winding it down, unless you guys got some final thoughts on the matter.
I think we need to have an off-air discussion about organization again, and then bring basically all of our results and solutions that we can come up with on air, because otherwise it just ends up being a little disjointed. It's kind of hard for probably the average listener to follow, considering that, I found it hard to follow a lot of what we've been trying to discuss due to the jumping track and not having it organized and whatnot, even being a part of the conversation. So, plus it might help too if people like me can do the research on the stuff we're going to talk about, so I actually have everything in front of me and have links and stuff like that I can just start dropping in there, so people can, you know, you can basically gather all the data and get it ready so that they can try it out. I mean, it's all fine and dandy to say try this, but if you don't have all the information available so that they can basically follow it like a kit. Most people are not going to be able to do that.
Well, you can buy fluorescent bulb starters at any Walmart, any hardware store. They look like little aluminum cans. They're called fluorescent bulb starters, and when you pull the aluminum can off, you'll notice there's a little glass, and inside that little glass has argon in it. And inside the argon, you'll see that there's a little looped switch inside there, which is a thermal switch. When the argon gets hot from the energy coming in, then the thermal switch makes connection and turns the ballast on and off, or the fluorescent bulbs on and off, whichever. You can get those, you can test it, you can find out that what I'm saying is true. You can hook them up to any generating system. If you raise your RPMs up and voltage is high enough, you'll watch that argon inside there turn purple, which is in a plasma state, and once it turns purple, you will see that that thermal switch at some point will kick on, and from that point on, it will turn on a light bulb. And once that light bulb comes on and that thermal switch has made its connection and the light bulb comes on, that electron flow will shoot right back into that generator, and you'll watch that generator hit its face. It'll land right on its face. So it's the simplest way that I can put out there that average Joe can test right now to see exactly what it is I'm saying. That thermal switch will not move until heat heats it up. Now, whatever the temperature that actually occurs at, that's something that somebody's going to have to find out and measure. But as far as the fact that that plasma is actually generating heat that turns that switch on and off, that's the key right there, because I'm taking the energy off of it and I'm turning it into heat and light, and from that point on I can turn that heat and light back into usable energy again on the other side without ever invoking Lenz's law.
Well, about that private discussion I was talking about, I'm not, I should say off-air discussion, because I'm not really looking for a private discussion. We can post a link to, like, you know, allow people to join in or whatever. Maybe set up a separate system so that we can have two separate methods of communication available, so that way they don't, if people don't want to use Skype, they don't have to. If they don't want to use Google Hangouts, they don't have to, you know.
I still have the option of doing a live stream on YouTube.
Right. Well, and that connects using Google Hangouts, so if somebody's familiar and comfortable with that, that would allow people to basically have that conversation or join in the conversation using that method. But if it's set up properly, we can actually tie people in from Skype, too.
Yep.
So
let's work towards a Google Hangout, basically live stream YouTube, and I'll try to get some things together to basically show what it is that I'm talking about.
Well, and let's document everything too, you know, in lists and stuff like that. So, like I said, it makes it easier. They can just go step one, step two, step three. Ah, look at that, you know. Not just throw a bunch of stuff at them and hope they remember it and, you know, figure out how to put it all together.
Yeah.
So.
All right, well, we're down to the wire. It's been a pleasure as usual. So, everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science.
I guess if we're going to be serious about doing that, then they need to pay attention to the website at some point. That means you'll be popping a link up on the main page, refresh it, clear your cache, make sure you're getting a fresh copy of it, because changes are on the way, you know?
Yep.
Real change, not the change we were promised 8 years ago.
I agree. All right, everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science on ShazizRadio.com. Peace and love. Stay tuned. This ought to get exciting. Take care.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.